The Diesel Podcast.
Developing innovation in English as a second or other language.
Episode 65, Universal Design for Learning in ESOL.
Welcome to Diesel. This is episode 65. We are your hosts. I'm Brent Warner.
And I'm Michelle Reyes. Happy 4th, Brent.
Happy 4th. How are you?
I'm good. And welcome back from ISTE.
Thank you. Yes.
Still recovering?
Still recovering a little bit. ISTE is overwhelming. Like, there's just a lot going on. We had a little bit of a wild and unexpected problem with our session. So I was doing a poster session with the outstanding Anren, and she got stuck in your neck of the woods. She got stuck in Texas. And
the rain kept her behind.
It was like the rain and all the airport problems that are happening right now. So she's like sending me these messages the night before. She's like,
man,
I was at some event and I had a couple of drinks, and then she's sending me these texts and she's like, Brent, I'm not gonna make it, I'm stuck here, like I've already been in the airport for 19 hours. And I'm like, I don't really know how to process that, because she was the lead presenter on it. And so I kind of felt like I was there for support. I would be talking about my part on it, but like, so then it ended up being a whole massive switch, and I ended up I ended up doing it, but it was just kind of an open conversation. I posted a picture of it on Twitter. We'll leave it in the show notes as well, that I just kind of made a cardboard sign saying, let's talk about it. And then I stole a poster from one of the other groups that was the hour before me, and I flipped it around. And so then I just had people writing their ideas up on there as well. And then we could just kind of have some conversation. So it was an unexpected twist, but it went pretty well. I mean, it was a good conversation. It was a good change. I just, like, it wasn't what I was thinking that I was going to be presenting on. So,
as always, though, you made it happen.
Yeah. Well, and that's it was actually kind of cool. So the conversation was about today's topic. So, Universal Design for Learning. And so it was kind of cool because it was like showing that ideas that, like, hey, there are ways to make things work. Right. And like, you don't always have to have it perfectly set up. You don't always have to get things totally right. And so that a lot of teachers that came up and talked to me were like, oh, you're doing this stuff right now, like in this kind of presentation, you're making it accessible.
All you needed was that cardboard.
Yeah, you're making it work. I found a piece of cardboard in the men's room, and I tore it up and started writing on the back of it.
Oh, man.
And then, oh my gosh, Brian Briggs, if you're listening, he went and did the good old erase the message on the cardboard on the picture. And so then he started writing his own messages on there and putting that out. And it's like, oh boy, he was mostly kind with the new messages that I had holding on my cardboard. But yeah, there was, some tomfoolery going on with all of that as well. But it was good. So we got to talk about universal design learning a bit. I'll tell you, ISTE is like overwhelming. There's just so much going on.
Can you imagine having ADD or ADHD and being there?
Oh my gosh. Like, it was hard to pay attention to any one thing at any time. And so I'm hoping with the rest of my summer off, except for cleaning pools, that I can go back and watch some of the video episodes, because I didn't really have time for everything. So
no, there's no time. There's so much. And every time, even though you think you've looked through the app, you've selected your sections, you know where you're going. Once you get there, you might change your mind because you learn about something else. And so that just, you just leave feeling like you missed out on something, even though you got a ton of stuff probably from going there. But it's overwhelming.
Yeah. And so it was just kind of a combination of all of those things. I'll say New Orleans was absolutely outstanding. Just what an amazing city. I could easily spend a lot more time there. I was like, if I didn't have a job, like if I didn't have a full-time job, I might be applying and considering moving here, because it was just so cool. There was so much great stuff. And like, you know, the French Quarter and all that touristy stuff is cool, of course, yeah. too. But like, but getting out of there too and going to like some mm-hmm. of the other parts of the city was, you know, there's just tons of amazing culture, things to do.
Did you try some gator jerky?
Mm-hmm. I had a little bit of gator stuff. We went on a gator tour. We did all like we crammed in quite a lot. So so yeah. Get your butt to New Orleans.
awesome.
But today we're going to talk about Universal Design for Learning, and mm-hmm. We're going to kind of an intro to it. It's deep, Ishel. It's real deep.
It is a beast. This is new for me, so yeah. I'm very happy that we're doing this episode. But again, it's going to be an overview or introduction, because we're going to have to come back to this and do a deep dive eventually.
Absolutely.
All right. So Universal Design for Learning. Brent, just what is it? Every time you mention UDL, I'm always thinking, okay, it's this fancy word for something. It's a I just don't know. It's new for me.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about it here and there in a couple of our interviews, but what is it and what drew you to this approach, other than the fact that you're constantly looking for new ideas, new approaches, et cetera?
Yeah. So basically, if we kind of keep this simple, UDL is a kind of a framework. So we've talked about other mm-hmm. frameworks too. And it's a framework and a set of guidelines for designing your classes and designing the activities that you're going to be doing with your students, right? Mm-hmm. And so the way that you think about it, the universal part is super important here, because, mm-hmm. You know, the kind of the common image that people give when they talk about this is the idea of stairs versus a ramp getting into a building, right? So mm-hmm. Stairs, if you are mobile and ambulatory, you can walk up those stairs and it's no problem. But if you need a wheelchair, or if you you know, have any number of issues affecting your muscles or your strength or your ability to go upstairs, mm-hmm. right, a ramp can get you up on the other side, right? But everybody can use the ramp. Not mm-hmm. everybody can use the stairs, right? And so
I love that analogy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you start thinking about that in terms of how you're designing your courses and how you're designing your classes, you say, well, hold on a second. This stuff that we're doing, like, everybody can benefit from this, but why am I building it in a way that only a certain number of people can benefit from? And those numbers might mm-hmm. be low in some cases, they might be high in other cases. And so understanding that idea that, like, those limitations could be, in our case, language issues, right, many mm-hmm. times. They could be cultural issues. They could be, you know, background knowledge issues. Mm-hmm. They could be motivation issues. There's all sorts of different possible things. But this idea is that you are doing your best. And I'll point out, just like with all the frameworks, you're not going to get it perfect, right? Like, you're right. not going to capture absolutely every possible thing. But if you have this in your mind and the way of your thinking about things, and the more you continue to build, a little bit better you get at it over time. I am also not an expert on this. And so, like, mm-hmm. You know, when I am still trying to learn and get better and better at it. So yes, I want to reiterate that today we're really kind of scratching the surface just to get people the idea of it. Because I think mm-hmm. when you go onto the website, which is outstanding, udlguidelines.cast.org, it gives you so much information. That's kind of what's guiding our conversation today. But once you start digging deep, it's like, oh, there's more. Oh, there's more. Oh, yeah. there's more and more and more and more. And so, it's really about, like, training yourself to hopefully be better at default thinking in this way, so that what you're making does work for more and or even all of your students. And so that's kind of the big idea of it. And then, yeah. So does that make sense, Ishel?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think, and so this is the first time that I've been to their website. And as you said, it's beautifully done, organized very well, especially for someone who's new and just kind of clicking around to learn more about it. Mm-hmm. And what stands out to me when I'm just the first time I look at there's this the chart that breaks everything down, all the categories. The model is something that guides the teachers through three levels of the learner experience or journey, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And that would be access. Mm-hmm. Building, and internalizing. And for all of these The end goal is learners or expert learners who are purposeful and motivated. And this is straight from their website, resourceful and knowledgeable and strategic and goal oriented. And that would be for all the learners, not just some of the learners, some of them that have access or et cetera. So I thought that immediately you are able to see that within the layout of the framework.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's kind of the process there. So like first you access, then you build, then you internalize, mm-hmm. right? But the way that they do this is they have it in three different kind of columns and, mm-hmm. And so the guidelines are built under these three columns. So first is to provide multiple means of engagement, and then to provide multiple means of representation, and then to provide multiple means of action and expression. Now, again, so many choices inside of each of these, like it's mm-hmm. really going to be hard to get into all of them. But I think we can kind of, again, touch a little bit on each part of them to understand what they are. So that idea of the engagement is like understanding the why of learning. Mm-hmm. The representation is understanding the what of learning, and action and expression is kind of understanding the how of learning. So we thought we would kind of go over these a little bit today, just to get the core idea of it, and then also in the second part maybe talk about some tools or some ways that you mm-hmm. can actually implement some of these as well.
Yeah, so to start with engagement, that's really where you're recruiting interest, you're sustaining effort and persistence of the students, and then also self-regulation. Mm-hmm. We're not going so deep into these. There's a whole section every time you click on these categories. Brent, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that.
Yeah, we'll get into it a little bit, just mm-hmm. to make sure that people understand what mm-hmm. they mean. So starting with that first one, so when you go inside, it's like, okay, this is the big category, and then it's got a guideline inside of it, and then it's got checkpoints inside of it, and then they all mm-hmm. have research inside of those. But like the big idea, so recruiting interest is like, how are you sparking the interest of the learners, right? How are you making mm-hmm. them curious about things? And some of the ways that you can do that is you can optimize choice, right? So that they mm-hmm. have their choice in what they're going to be doing. You can optimize the relevance. So again, this conversation of like, are my stories all about like, you know, white boys who become superheroes, or mm-hmm. is it going to be something that's more relevant to each of your own students' lives, right? Mm-hmm. And then also this idea of minimizing threats and distractions. So making an open space for learning where people feel safe to engage with their work. So that's kind of just the baseline of getting people interested in things. Then the second one you said is sustaining effort mm-hmm. and persistence. What does that mean to you, Ishelle?
So what that means to me is varying the demands and the resources to make sure that that challenge is optimized for the students. Absolutely promoting an environment that's going to support collaboration, build community perhaps, because when you have that, your students will be more focused on the goals and the objective of that activity. Plus with a lot of the things that they have to do, sometimes there's going to be failure, but you want students to continue persisting, right? Mm-hmm. And you want them to be able to take feedback that you're giving them, and you want to increase mastery oriented feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that one's big for me. Like a lot of my work mm-hmm. recently is very heavily focused on feedback. One of my presentations that I've been doing is like about helping people really enjoy giving feedback more. So that one's super key to me. And then this last guideline is about self-regulation. So, you know, getting people motivated for internal motivation, right? So we mm-hmm. talk about the, you know, promoting expectations, making sure that students know how to deal with things when they're having problems, or strategies for success. And then also this idea of like, you know, developing self-assessment, right? So how do I work with this? How do I improve it for the next time around? All of those conversations. And so again, all of these, I think individually, Ishel, a lot of teachers are doing, right? Mm-hmm. But not necessarily with the idea of plugging them into this mm-hmm. framework. And so when you start understanding that, like, oh, when I do it this way, it actually helps more students rather than just one or two students, right? Then you can start saying, I'm going to use this strategy a little bit more, that strategy a little bit less.
Right. And I think, you know, as you're reading some of these and talking through them, I'm thinking of autonomy, mm-hmm. autonomy and supporting that in a student so that a student can eventually self-guide their own learning.
Right, right. So let's jump over to the second one, which is representation. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that one being like the what of learning, right?
Right. And so the first item here is providing options for perception. Mm-hmm. In this case, it might be you'll have a multiple variety of learning styles, and you're not going to have one individual one that's solely visual, but you want to offer different ways that information can be customized, the way that you display the information. You might want to also offer different alternatives for auditory information, and the same thing for visual information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of those things, like, how are they getting this information, right? Mm-hmm. If you give them a piece of paper and everything's written at 8-point font, then they don't have any way to really, like, you know, like, hey, I can't see this very well, or I need to zoom in on this, right? We'll get into some of the tools for this, but like, we can kind of recognize that when we're limiting those options, and I want to kind of stay away for myself from like learning styles, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. not really the conversation, but it's like the ways that you can access this information, the more ways that people can access, the better it becomes.
Mm-hmm. And there's learners who are going to want to look at all different forms of that information, not just the text version, but each time they revisit another option, they're able to, it's like another layer of affirming what they're learning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. The second one inside of there is language and symbols. So this one is huge for us and for our field, right?
Mm-hmm,
vocabulary and symbols, making sure that those things are clear. And especially with symbols too, right? Like, a lot of times, I think, Ishel, you and I talk about icons mm-hmm. a lot, right? That mm-hmm. they're universal ideas. And so those mm-hmm. really fit in well and help students understand better than like, hey, it's just a complicated word or a complicated mm-hmm. phrasing or something like that. And then this goes into many different variations. So like the ideas of like syntax and structure and helping people make sure they understand that. Decoding text or mathematical notations, right? It might seem obvious to some teachers mm-hmm. that this symbol means, you know, greater than or equal to, but it might not be obvious to every student. Right.
And especially, you know, a mathematical notation such as where to put the percent symbol mm-hmm. either in front or behind a number mm-hmm. or a currency symbol in different cultures, you put different languages, you put it in a different place. And so your student, maybe to you, it seems like they're getting it wrong, but they're actually doing it according to their country. Mm-hmm. So understanding and recognizing that they're used differently. Yeah. This brings up, Brent, very quickly, a cartoon that one of my students sent recently. It's a man parked on the street, and the sign says "fine for parking." And there's a police officer writing a ticket to the man who's mm-hmm. standing there saying, "I thought it was okay to park here." Mm-hmm. And so again, big in our field.
Yeah, for sure. That, like, that's a great example of it right there. Mm-hmm. So, and then it continues going on, this idea of promoting understanding across languages, illustrating ideas through multiple media. So there's lots of different parts inside of this idea of language and symbols.
So the next category under that column is providing options for comprehension. Mm-hmm. And this is where you're activating background knowledge. And if there is no background knowledge there, you can supply something for the students to have. Anything where you're drawing attention to patterns, features of that are salient features of something, mm-hmm. Any kind of big concept, big idea, and relationships among those ideas. Also guiding students through visualization so that they're processing information differently and maximizing opportunities for generalization mm-hmm. and transfer of information. So all of this are like the higher level thinking, critical thinking type of activities, I guess.
Right.
What I'm envisioning.
Yeah. And again, it's about those ways of helping to make sure that students can see and really understand that information. Mm-hmm. So again, we started with engagement, right? It's like, okay, I'm interested in this now. Mm-hmm. Now it's representation. Does it speak to me? Is there mm-hmm. a way for me to totally understand this, right? Mm-hmm. And that might also include building things out. And then the final one is action and expression, right? So mm-hmm. this is the final kind of category. And so the idea of action and expression is this idea, is the how, right? Like it's actually like, hey, I'm going to now create something, I'm going to now make something, and show how you're doing those things. And so again, same as before, there are a number of categories under each one of those. So the first one is physical action, right? So making things accessible, using accessible materials and tools. So maybe there are different ways to respond to things, right? You don't always want to, you're not always going to click ABCD, right? or maybe you're going to draw your response to an idea, or maybe you're going to record your voice for it, right? Like what is the way that you're actually interacting with these things? And then also optimizing access to tools. So it's like, are these tools accessible?
The options truly accessible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Like can I actually click into this and use it, or does it require all of these separate steps for me to just get mm-hmm. started with it, right? So a lot of those can be like, what is the actual physical action related to these?
Mm-hmm. The next area there in this column is options for expression and communication. And I know that you and I constantly talk about this in our show. Mm-hmm. It's providing multiple media for communication.
Right.
Giving students multiple tools to build and compose things, to put things together. And again, we're going to get into these in the second part of the show, but also building fluencies with graduated levels of support for practice and performance.
Yeah. And I mean, I really feel like this is, again, for, ESOL mm-hmm. and all of this stuff. Like this is stuff that a lot of times we know well, because we're already building these things. Cause a lot of these, so much of this fits so well. Like I love the idea that UDL, like if you just start thinking, hey, I'm teaching English language learners, you're already going to clear a whole path of the UDL guidelines.
Right.
That maybe a teacher who's not specifically teaching ESL is going to be like, oh, I have to figure this out, right?
Yeah.
And so we by default, and congratulations, everybody.
Yay!
so we by default are often doing many of these things. Again, like making the assumption that all of our listeners are doing well and trying to do their best for their students. But we already do this stuff, right? We talk about scaffolding language buildings, right? We talk about
that in itself does so much, covers, you have to do it in many of these areas. Mm-hmm. The scaffolding falls into it. And I'm trying really hard not to give away the tools that we use, because I know talked about this in episode blah blah blah.
We're both holding our tongue. Okay, last one. Let's get into the very last one. Is it you or me who's talking about this one?
You, executive functions, sir.
Executive functions. So how do you make the most out of learning, right? So helping students understand their goal setting and making sure that that's appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. How to plan and build strategies for everything, managing your information, right? Like how are you collecting, saving, using, and facilitating all of that? Also showing a way to understand how you are growing, right? So like actually building your, what they call the capacity for monitoring progress, right? So like showing for yourself as a learner, how am I showing myself that I am actually getting better at this? So these are the kind of the categories that we're looking at. And then I think when we jump over, and I hope that kind of gives, again, it's just not justified to talk about this for 15 or 20 minutes.
No, we're going to have like a series, like sort of like with the standards.
Yeah, no, we should do that. Like we're really where we do like a series of 1, 2, 3, where we do mm-hmm. a deep dive into each of these categories alone. But we're going to get the loose conversation at least going here right now.
Yeah.
So that's a start. The ideas again of UDL here, the concepts that you might be looking at. And again, I would encourage people to not get too stressed, because it feels like when you're first looking at this, like I did the same thing. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm a
click
one. Ah. Goodbye. Right. Like I'm a terrible teacher if I'm not doing all these things. Right. And it's like, and I still like, I'm like, you know, it's like, oh, am I doing this thing? Am I, you know, like I haven't processed what each of these things mean totally well. Right. It takes time, right. They're big concept ideas. They're very well researched. There's tons of information behind them. And so like some of these, I'm like, yeah, we totally do this. And other ones, I'm like, oh, I'm not sure that I do that very well. And I think that's a fair thing that we need to understand as teachers, like to, you know, again, we keep talking about this idea of giving ourselves permission to continue to be human, right? Where we don't always know everything. We're not the best at everything, but we try to get better at it slowly and surely. And so I want to encourage people.
Mm-hmm. And Brent, even if you were the expert teacher that's got it all there, guess what? The learner comes in with new factors. So that is never something we can control.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a start. And then we'll do like a quick run through some of the tools on the other side.
Thank you for supporting the show. You can leave us a review on iTunes. We are still waiting for our first 2022 review.
Dang,
if you're out there,
what's going on?
We do have a Patreon, and you can also support us by buying us a coffee on our site. It is summer. We are dying for some cold brew, but you can also share the show with a colleague.
That's actually our number one. We really don't care that much about yeah. I know we always share talk the about show. The reviews, but it's like, but really what happens when someone's like, oh, I shared this with my mom who was a teacher and she really liked this episode. I shared it with her. I'm like, oh, like that's what gets my heart.
Glorious. Glorious.
Sure. So thank you for those of you who are out there sharing any individual episodes and, or the whole show. All right. So, Ishel, I know we're on a little bit of a timeline today. We normally can kind of rollick and take slow walks through everything. But today we are going to jump into just a little, you know, some of these tools and how we might work with them and how we can kind of understand them. A lot of these tools we've talked about already in the past, so we don't want to get totally into the whole history of them and what they all do. But we just want to say like, hey, these are how they fit into loosely into these categories, and lots of overlap for sure. So I want to be clear about that like nothing is only one or only the other. It's like, hey, in this case, you can use it for this. In this case, that it might be stronger here. It doesn't mean not to use it in another place. They're just kind of ways to understand how those things work. So let's start with that first level, engagement. And we'll talk about, we already mentioned that the feedback can be really important. So I know what you know, Ishel, the first thing that I'm going to say when we talk about feedback, it's got to be Google Docs, right? Like it is built for feedback right inside of it, right? You have the comments feature built right in there. As you know, I love Moat. And so Moat is a plugin that you can also add your voice into the feedback right there for the students. Outstanding. So they can hear your real voice and they can hear what you're trying to say. Flipgrid's another one that you can do for feedback, right? You can talk directly to the student after seeing what they've said. Oh, sorry. And Ishel, we need to, I need to make a mistake.
Flipgrid.
Yeah, it's not Flipgrid. You oldie. You don't know what it's.
Come on now. That was yesteryear.
That was so 3 days ago.
Yeah, 3 days ago.
Now
3 years ago, internet time.
Flip. Yes, they changed their name to Flip. And so, we can save that conversation for another time. It's like changing names. I did not go to the Flipgrid party, so I don't know what their story for changing it was, but I'm getting the feeling that they're trying to expand beyond the classroom and make it kind of its own social media platform. So
boy.
And Edpuzzle too. So if you use things like Edpuzzle where you've got those video engagements and you've got the answers already ready to go for them, you could definitely use that.
Yeah. So another way to foster engagement is, again, to have a place for collaboration and community. And as always, we go to Google, a lot of the Google apps, the Google Suite already offers that. Another one with visual representation is Canva. Canva can allow multiple users to collaborate. Padlet, which works as a bulletin board. And then my fun find is going to fall into this category, but I'll save that till the end. HyperDocs. HyperDocs are a great way for students to collaborate. And then having choice boards, oftentimes, again, it gives the student control over how they're engaging, mm-hmm. and they're more tied to whatever it is that they're doing because they chose that particular tool. And so they're more connected and there's ownership there.
Yeah. Yeah. And just if we're not clear, I don't know if we've talked much about choice boards, but choice boards are kind of those grids, right? So it's like 3x3 and it's like, hey, you can do a visual one, you can do an auditory one, you can do a written one, right? And then it's like, and then students can choose mm-hmm. how they want to respond to an assignment, right? So that, hey, I'm going to do a flip video. I'm going mm-hmm. to do a Google Docs written assignment, or I'm going to record a podcast or something like that.
Yeah. And in K-12, oftentimes in the lower or the primary grades, we call those the may do's and the can do's. Mm. And there's usually a list of like you may do, and then you can choose anything from there. Or sorry, there's the may do's and then must do's. And under the must do's are things that they have to do to complete that objective, but there's choices. Mm-hmm. So no matter what the student has to accomplish, there's a lot of choices. So I think it's the may do's and the must do's, but there's always a list of different ways to complete that activity.
Nice. Okay. So then when we move into the representation column here, we'll start with perception. So again, ways for students to make sure that they're getting that perception, or they're perceiving the information correctly, or through multiple means. Google Docs is great. So one of the things is being able to zoom in on that text, or being able to manipulate the text and make it bigger and smaller. So you can do that directly with any word processor, of course. You can do live captioning. So if you're teaching online and you turn on the live captioning in Zoom or something like that, and have that available to them as another means to, they're listening to you, but they can also read what you're saying. And I will say those are just getting stronger and stronger. They're definitely not perfect, but you know, hey, if the students understand, hey, this might not be perfect, but it'll help you, and you might be able to pick up on a couple extra words that you weren't going to pick up on last time, that's great. Immersive Reader. So we've talked about this one. This is a Microsoft tool, mm-hmm. but there is a kind of a hacked version that goes into Google Chrome. Basically, you can click on that thing and it will read out the text for you. It'll highlight out the verbs and the nouns. It'll speed it up or slow it down, all sorts of things like that. And then similar to that too is Text Help, the Read and Write Text Help, Michelle. We've talked a little bit about that as well. So you can click on a word and you can bring up a picture dictionary. You can click on a word and see how it's pronounced, all these different things like that as well. So so those are some great tools for perception.
Yeah. And so I'm seeing all across the list, we have Google Docs for everything. So that tells you Google Docs really does touch on a lot of these categories. So for representing language and symbols, you can use, again, Google Docs, because you're able to embed items into it. We've got Kami app, another collaborative tool. Students can use drawings, they can use text, you can do all sorts of charts if you needed to. And then multimedia embeds, videos or audio of listening to a portion of something. Brent, I'm not sure if there's anything you want to add here.
Yeah, I think just to make sure, like, if people don't know what Kami is, like, mm-hmm. It's now what I recommend when people talk about PDFs.
PDFs, oh yeah.
Because it's like, on steroids. Acrobat is so terrible. It's so, so bad. And it's like amazing all the stuff that Adobe's doing. And then they've just clearly got like one person who's past retirement age working in the basement who's only working on Adobe Acrobat.
Okay, so now we've insulted that.
Yeah. No, I love the rest of it.
Coming for us.
They're coming for us. They're going to get us.
Coming for us.
You know what? Honest feedback is the best feedback.
No, speak the truth, because Kami app is exactly what it's you can collaborate. Students don't have to be logged in. You simply share out a link. It shows you who's on there adding something. Then you can save that document for later and it doesn't ruin your original document. It's in the cloud. You can add multiple, have multiple sources for that PDF. You can convert to PDF. You can save as a PDF. You can print out notes. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I cannot say enough about Kami.
Yeah, it really is. Like, and I've got so many teachers who are like, oh, well, I've already got this as a PDF. How do I convert it to a Google Doc? And I'm like, it's going to be a lot more work than if you just can't. Like, in this case, like, make new documents that are, accessible
editable, and editable. Yeah.
But when you've got, 20 years of PDFs and you're like, I am not going to demand that people remake everything, like, every time. And Kami is a great response to that. And, of course, like, again, it fits into all of this. So, last part here, under representation. We've got comprehension. So again, Kami can really help out with this. And oh, and by the way, Kami versus Kami, I got to be careful about this. I think they call it Kami, right?
But it's not Kami like paper.
It's clearly the Japanese word Kami, right?
Kami.
And so I was wondering, this is a total white boy question, but like, which is, cultural appropriation, using the correct name that they are not saying the correct way, or using the wrong name, the wrong pronunciation
of something that they've
chosen to. That's a conundrum for everyone.
I immediately is like, Kami, like paper. Yeah, paper. That makes sense. That's brilliant. Wait a minute.
But Kami. They all call it Kami, right? So, okay. Anyways, last couple ones. ScreenPal is great. So ScreenPal is kind of like Moat. But with video instead of audio. So you can add your own.
This is new for me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's so cool. And I've been talking to them a little bit. This is from the people who do Screencast-O-Matic.
Yes. I didn't know. That's awesome.
It's really, really cool. And there's a lot of things that they're building into it and kind of adding. And it's like they just launched this fairly recently. But it's nice because you can actually just hover over it and the video starts playing instead of like having to go in and install
and a bunch clicking of stuff. And
so it's pretty great. And then Edu Protocols too. So you can go back to that John Carrippo episode if you want to kind of get into the ideas, because those really do help with that comprehension level of building into representation too.
Excellent. So for action and expression, and this is a lot of the digital storytelling is one way. You could do that with Google Slides. You could do that with Book Creator. Canva is excellent. Adobe Express, now that they're no longer, gosh, I don't even remember what they were called before this. Spark. Adobe Express. Spark was so much better. But anyway, Adobe Express. Seesaw, a lot of you are familiar with Seesaw. We do have episodes on some of these. Mm-hmm. I want to go ahead and read through the next few, Brent. Okay. So we've got digital storytelling and then digital manipulatives, Google Slides, Google Drawings. Seesaw can do that as well. And then for annotations, we've got Kami. Mm-hmm. Again, because you can annotate PDFs and docs and anything really that you load on there. And then Hypothesis.is. And Brent, I know we talked about this. I know you've talked about it, and I cannot remember for the life of me what that was.
Yeah. So Hypothesis, again, I haven't used it very much, but some of my colleagues do. It's an annotation. It's kind of turning the annotations on the side into a conversation and a chat board, I think. Like, it's so like when you've got, especially with the PDF, you bring up that PDF and then you highlight a section, and then it basically starts a conversation on the side of that section. So you can start talking about things, and then your classmates can respond to you and kind of have deeper conversations over there in the comments section. So
I'm going to have to come back to that and see how we apply that. Yeah. And then Brent, you've got a ton of stuff that you grab from ISTE Live.
I'll keep this as brief as possible, but these are not vetted, but what I did for my poster session presentation that I was alone on,
cardboard.
I put up on the wall and I just said, hey, write your own ideas. What do you think fits under these categories? So I have not vetted these, but they're just things that people wrote up on the wall, just kind of said, hey, it fits under these categories. So you can take a look for them for yourself. But under engagement, we've got Blookit, Wakelet, and some of these might repeat too. So sorry, I'm just gonna read.
Go ahead.
Blookit, Wakelet, Canva, Padlet, PlayPosit, and Edpuzzle, Talking Points, MathIsFun.com, Chem4Kids.com. Underrepresentation. Someone wrote, actually, this is, I had a good conversation with this guy. He was talking about culturally diverse texts. He was cool. He was like, he was building this whole program, and one of these things was really important to him. So, so that really fit in there. Dark reader, is, you know, kind of making the strain less, open dyslexic, and, Workana. Again, I don't totally know what these are yet, but, I'm going to look into them. And then the last section, under expression, people added in Habitica, a Runstone Academy, and Ollie for meeting notes. So again, if any of those sound interesting to you, or and again, I don't totally know if they fit in those categories myself. I'll have to kind of do a little bit more thinking on them. But yeah, lots of people were adding ideas and thoughts and trying to kind of get their own heads around these concepts as well. So this is a ton of information and a very brief overview at the same time.
So if you get anything out of it, is the major concept of what UDL is, so that we can come back and do a deep dive.
Yeah. Remember, so we've just talked for 40 minutes. Just if you remember only the ramp and the stairs, you're good.
the ramp and the stairs. All right. I am super excited about my fun find today, because not only do I love it, but it also fits right into our UDL concept. And Brent, have you heard of Collanote?
No.
C-O-L-L-A, like collaborate and then notes. So I've been looking for, first of all, I'm a Notability user. I love Notability. Mm-hmm. Been using it for years, but I wanted something, I was testing other things, because again, when you stick to one thing, you may miss out on others. And so I found Collanote, which is absolutely free. And that's another thing I love. Notability is about $8, which is not a big price to pay for a very robust note app. But again, if you're trying to make things accessible to your students, free without any sign up is the way to go. So Collanote allows you to open up notebooks, and you simply share the name of the notebook with another user, and they can annotate right into that document. You can upload a picture, a PDF. You can open a PDF. So let's say you're in a lecture and you've got your students who need to, you know, it's a 200 student class, and you've got to, people can add their, what's it called? Designs or drawings, charts, etc. And so the way I found this was I was inspired by one of our recent conversations on sketchnoting. And so I was trying to find something that, if I were to tell my students, hey, use something and here it is, and it does the job, it's Collanote. So I think that the notes aren't stored in a cloud there, so you would have to save them to your own drive, and that's the only thing. I think they're kept for like 24 hours, and I think that's one of the reasons that makes it available for free. But then you can have your endless notebooks, personal notebooks on your own that you can share publicly, and they've got templates. So it's a light version of what I wish Notability could do. But again, and you can do also voice notes. So again, if you're need to refer back to the lecture or a speaker or something, and you could simply record on there. So it's amazing. And cool. It's free.
Cool. Okay. So mine is something I did in Louisiana. I finally, lifelong dream achieved of...
You found Louisiana.
I found Louisiana. just like I found New York, you guys. Yes. I found New Orleans.
Yes.
Let me tell you a little bit about it. No, I did a... I was going to choose New Orleans because it's so great. But anyways, Airboat Adventures. So this is
what
a
is tour. An airboat?
So you know the things you've seen with the big fan on the back that go across the marshes.
Oh, that's yes.
And so we went to the bayou, and we did one of these tours, and I would highly recommend pay the extra for the smaller boat that you can get on. Like, it was so great, and we were jumping on there, and we had this old Cajun, like, you know, totally spent his whole life in the bayou, just knew everything, could barely understand him.
That's awesome. So you practiced your French?
Yep. But he was, but we got all these alligators, and these alligators, like, were jumping up on the boat. Like, they're like a foot away from me. So like, they were coming up, they were all over the place, and it was totally live nature, like real, like, you know, it's like one of those things, you see these things on videos and you're like, oh, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, this is totally wild. And so it was absolutely worth it. It was just so cool. I'll try and post up a video too, so that like we can have
in
the show notes as well, just like of the alligator snapping at marshmallows that he was throwing out for them.
So alligators like marshmallows.
They like things, I guess, that float on top of the water. So he was saying you could also throw donuts out there. Like that's what they recognize. Fun fact. But they would come up, so he would throw out a marshmallow, and that's how they were easily distracted by that too. So if they're getting too close, then he would just like, you would like throw it a little further away. And so, but it was like, but he's like, he would stop every once in a while. He's like, now there's no joke. Like you could really, really, really get hurt. And some of these places we were showing up and there would be like six alligators all at the same time. Right?
And those things are massive.
Oh yeah. Some 14 feet long. Like they're big. So anyways, this particular tour, I'll put the direct link to this company, cause I thought it was a great experience. Airboat Adventures. If you ever end up down there in, New Orleans, it's worth it.
Pool boy Brent moves on to the bayou.
I know. I was not able to clean the bayou. It was a little bit of a mess for me. It was a little too much algae.
All right. You could win a one-of-a-kind diesel pin by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. And for other social media shout-outs, tag us on any platform.
For the show notes and other episodes, you can check out diesel.org/65. That's the number 65. And of course, you can listen to us at Voice Ed Canada. That's VOICED.ca. We are on Twitter. We are sharing the tweets at DieselPod. So DieselPod. And I am at Brent G. Warner.
I'm Michelle at IXY_Pixie. That's IXY_PIXY. In Ojibwe, thank you is Migwich. Migwich for tuning in to the Diesel Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.